In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Thursday, February 7th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Industry Chatter in the 3 o'clock hour, and my guest today is a veteran of the federal contracting space. Stan Sloan is here. It's great to see you again, Stan. Last time you were here, it was with your last assignment, so why don't you catch us up by telling us what you're doing now and tell us about the company that you're running today.
Yeah, great to be with you again. Thanks. Yeah, we're doing a startup now that's oriented towards scanning of cargo containers. As you know, there's a law which requires cargo containers to be scanned prior to embarkation for the U.S., from maritime ports, and we've developed a system which is used to scan those containers to make sure there's no nuclear or radiological threats in them.
Is the industry still of the view that the 100% goal is attainable, or is that changing now as time goes on?
Well, I can tell you that that's my view, that 100% is attainable, and I think when you consider the fact that the threat continues to grow, we certainly think that's an objective. It is the law. We think it's attainable, and we think it's attainable at a reasonable price as well.
What's the state of the art now, not just in what your company does, but in what the cargo scanning landscape is as a whole?
Well, there's a variety of technologies deployed. That's usually deployed either through DHS or through the Department of Energy, which has a program called Megaports that puts scanning equipment into overseas ports. So there's a variety of technology deployed today, and it's being used to scan things coming into the U.S. or when they arrive on U.S. soil. Our technology is a little different. Mostly what you see today is either X-ray or X-ray-type systems or radiation detectors. Our system uses muons, which are a byproduct of the natural cosmic ray interaction in the atmosphere. We don't generate any additional radiation, and we use the muons to scan the containers. Muons are very good at finding high-density materials, which, of course, if you had a nuclear radiological threat, that would tend to be high-density. So it's a pretty interesting, very revolutionary technology. It's the first time it's been made into a truly operational type system.
Tell me about the experience of presenting a product to a government that's asking for innovation and asking for new technology, but doing so in the budget environment that we live in right now.
It's a challenge. we have to operate, of course, within the budget environment. So the first issue that we faced is to introduce a transformational technology. That's very difficult because people are skeptical. It hasn't been proven before, and you have to be pretty convincing. You have to have very good data, test data, to show that it works. And that's the first hurdle that we had to get over because this hadn't been done before. It hadn't really been tested until summer of 2011. And so when we got the test data and started to present that to the appropriate federal agencies, that was an eye-opener because mm-hmm. nobody really believed you could do this. You could make it, practical, an operationally practical system. So that was part A. Then there's how do you get the government to test it and qualify it such that it can be acquired and deployed? We're sort of in that process now. And then, there, of course, if and when you're lucky enough to get the government to say they want to acquire it, you have to have appropriations behind it to acquire it. So we've completed the first step, we're in the second step, and we're thinking ahead to the third step, and we're hoping that the government will see this as a priority enough that they'll appropriate money.
It seems to me that given where we are budget-wise now, that last one is the toughest hurdle, is demonstrating the return on investment, that spending money here will help the government save money out of another bucket.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that is probably the toughest problem. Well, I don't know. Taking muons and making a system that works was a hard problem too, but we're past that. So the answer I would give you is that there are ways to address that. You know, there's public-private partnerships. There's other mechanisms such that you can get the funding you need to do this sort of stuff.
The public-private partnership is an aspect of this. We talked about this not too long ago. That part of it, I think, is the most interesting because it's one of the things that that term keeps popping up over and over and over again in the ways that different agencies are talking about different ways to approach all kinds of challenges that the budget's presenting. What does a successful one of those look like in your mind? How is it structured? Who does what and who achieves what result?
In general, when I say public-private partnership, I mean that we take private sector capital to deploy these assets for a particular mission application, and there's a partnership with the government because, frankly, we're dealing with an inherently governmental function when you're talking about ensuring that nuclear devices aren't smuggled into the country. So it has to be a partnership because the government has to somehow certify or qualify the operation of the systems that in a public-private partnership they haven't bought. They're not their systems. They,
yes.
In other words, contracted with private industry to put the capital equipment in. So it's a bit tricky because of that inherently governmental function in this particular instance, but those are all things that I think are solvable.
In what ways would that then be applicable to another potential use? It maybe not have anything to do with cargo screening. What I'm getting at is it strikes me that this could potentially be a model for these kinds of partnerships in other agencies, other uses, other applications.
Yeah, and you know, there are a lot of examples today that not necessarily cargo screening, but you know, a good example is commercial aircraft, where you have power by the hour. You know, you acquire the airplane, and the engines, you know, you pay per hour towards overhaul of the engines, such that, you know, the government doesn't have to pay for the overhaul. I mean, that's, you know, a simple example, but there's lots of things like that, and we also have a lot of mechanisms in terms of the revenue collection to pay for that. You know, take, for example, airline tickets, where there's a tax, and, you know, that goes into the aviation fund, and that becomes available for things. So there's models there that are appropriate, and, you know, given the right economics, certainly the private sector is willing to put the capital in to do that. They obviously expect a return on the investment, but you know, there's nothing preventing that, and it can be applied to a lot of different things.
Where are the points of dissonance when it comes to those kinds of partnerships? Now, if any, I mean, maybe there aren't any. Are there points of resistance where that's harder to get by than others?
The one that I've run into is this inherently governmental function. Mm-hmm. It's a little tricky to figure out how the government can assure itself that the results of this scanning, for example, are valid when they don't own the equipment. They've got to figure that part out. But other than that, I haven't seen much problem.
Is that a similar model, though, to what you've done in past lives, where they don't own some other kind of equipment that they're expected to use on a daily basis for some very sensitive applications?
Well, you know, the simplest example is communication satellites.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of communication satellites around that the government doesn't own the satellite, but they acquire bandwidth or time on the satellites, and that's an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
But there are several examples. The UK does a lot of public-private partnership. So, yeah, I think there's lots of precedents.
So this is, in your view, is it fair to say that it's just a matter of navigating this process, and once you get to that level of acceptance, it's a pretty replicable process? Once you kind of break through, the government should be comfortable doing this on a regular basis?
I think so. And, in the budget environment that we have today and we're likely to have for the foreseeable future, this is the way to get things done. And, you know, the government should take advantage of this. I think should be more aggressive about trying to put these things into place because it answers a lot of the issues with appropriations. You know, if we can reduce the need for appropriations, put it into the private sector. I think that's a great idea. Everybody benefits.
The capital, as you said, is there. Companies are willing to, and federal government's certainly not a real high risk when it comes to private sector capital investment, I wouldn't think.
No, and that's very attractive. So if the government were willing to put those models into place, I think you'd find a ready source of capital for exactly that reason.
Stan Sloan is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute on the Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
That? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, bangs, scores, and one. Okafor. Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stop. Durant. Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
In one of the biggest moves yet against sequestration, the Pentagon is cutting its aircraft carrier presence in the Persian Gulf. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta has approved the plan to keep just one carrier there. The U.S. has maintained two aircraft carrier groups in the Gulf for most of the last 2 years. Pentagon Press Secretary George Little said in a statement, the deployments of the USS Harry S. Truman and the USS Gettysburg, a guided missile cruiser, have been delayed because of budget uncertainty. I'm J.J. Green.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota's been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Two leading government figures are departing. We'll have live exit interviews you won't want to miss. NASA CIO Linda Cureton is retiring. We'll talk to her about leadership and diversity. And Commissioner Michael Astrew departs Social Security. He shares his thoughts about the future of benefits delivery. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Stan Sloan is my guest on Industry Chatter today, and we talked a little bit in the first segment, Stan, about innovation, and I want to dig into that a little bit more, because, as I mentioned, agencies are asking for that, and I hear from people on the vendor side of it constantly that the agencies, in some cases, not any particular one, but in some cases, are not always clear about what they're asking for. And it is hard for the vendor community to discern what the agencies consider to be innovative, whether it's only figure out some way for me to save a lot of money and that's a great innovation, or whether it's some kind of new technology. What is your sense of how any of that is playing out? Because everything that we think about and talk about is in the context of budgets right now.
You know, I'll just give you my perspective. The government is complex. And so the answer that I would give you may be appropriate for one part of the government,
sure,
but not another. It's just it's not homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. Innovation means different things to different people. Now, I'll give you an example in the case of Decision Sciences with this muon tomography. That was sort of transformational. So trying to get an audience and trying to get anybody to treat it seriously and put government resources into furthering the technology is not easy. That was very difficult. In fact, where we are today, this has been developed totally on private money. For that reason. And we do have contracts now with the government, but that's to test the system, not to develop it. We've paid for the development mm-hmm. ourselves. And so when you bring an innovative idea forward, you know, it's not as simple as somebody saying, well, that's innovative and I like it and let's, you know, give it a try. I mean, it's a tortuous path. So the agencies are calling for innovation, but there's also a lot of hurdles between them calling for it and getting to a point where they embrace it or are willing to put resources into it.
Are those hurdles necessary parts of the acquisition process because the government wants to be careful that they're not just spending money for something, a pig in a poke, or are they maybe holding the government back in some cases from getting at technology that can really help them save money and operate more efficiently, or maybe some combination of both or some of each in different cases, I guess?
I think it's both. And again, you know, there's no one answer that applies to every part of the federal government. But
sure.
In some cases, it's holding people back. Now, you know, I'll say my observation is federal agencies are like any organization. They're a product of their history and their experience. And so if you have a case where an agency perhaps has, you know, had some problems and, you know, is sort of on the hot seat at GAO, and, you know, then you find that there are more hurdles because they're a little bit careful, a little bit nervous.
Yes.
The perception of risk that agencies have associated with what you're talking about, I think, is a major factor
mm-hmm.
in their decision to embrace it or not. So it's a mixed bag. But in a lot of cases, it does hold back the agencies. And part of that is the federal acquisition bureaucracy, which they are obligated to adhere to. That's the law. And that does put some hurdles into place. It's not like the commercial world where if somebody thinks you got a good idea, you know, they give you a contract Monday to, you know, to do it. So, you know, it's sort of a mixed bag, I mm-hmm. guess, is the answer.
Is this a technology that you're establishing in the commercial market too?
Or yes.
So there will be at some point in the future some parallel stories. You can tell some success stories in the private sector. It's you're not totally reliant on the federal government to eventually decide whether to adopt or not adopt this technology.
No, we anticipate being predominantly a commercial company. We will have some government business. But we have now two commercial sales, so we're sort of starting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of government contracts now, and are anticipating several more things in the near term.
What is on the landscape legislatively that could impact this technology and the deployment of it and the way your company operates?
For Decision Sciences, and I would expect for several other companies that are in this space, the obvious one is H.R. 1, which is the law that requires 100% scanning of cargo coming into the U.S. The original investors in our company were responding to that law, And they said, well, if there's a federal mandate to do this, we're going to look around for some clever technologies that can help meet that mandate. And that's how we got money to get the company started. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's important for us to have that law stay in place. But I would argue it's more important for the country to have that law stay in place. You know, the threat of a nuclear device going off in a major city, in a major port, is unimaginable. You know, think of the consequences of that. Now, the probability of it may be low, but the consequences are tremendous. And so it's not like the world is a safer place today than it was yesterday, and it's not going to be safer tomorrow. You know, look at what's going on in certain places in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the convergence. When you have a convergence of things where there's a pressing national need for something, and you have people willing to invest in providing responses to that, that to me is a good combination.
The technology is interesting, and some of the materials that you supplied to us we have online also, and we're going to link to those at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so people can see more about the technology. But I would like to ask you when we come back about just some of the things that are going on more generally in the contracting space in government and all budgets and those kinds of things. You've been doing this for a long time and have a lot of experience in this area, so we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. Stan Sloan is my guest of Decision Sciences, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Register now for AFSEA's 12th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Focusing on working together, keeping the nation safe, this is the venue where you'll hear firsthand about the critical issues facing our country, including cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will participate, and contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. New this year is a small business matchmaking symposium. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, InfoZen, Kinetic North America, URS, and Verizon. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's afcea.org. Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Staying fit together. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. When the weather outside is frightful, being active ain't so delightful. It just takes motivation. Stay active with a buddy during the winter months and early spring. A partner can keep you accountable and make activities more fun. And being active during winter doesn't mean you have to go outdoors or use equipment. Shelley Full is the executive director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Running up and down the stairs in your home home, being able to lift bags full of soup cans and do some bicep curls or some basic weight training, strength training. You really can do a lot without any equipment whatsoever.
Yoga and biking are good group activities that can help you learn new techniques, and any exercise you do keeps your mind sharp. Learn more at fitness.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Join Affirm for a robust discussion of the looming financial issues and the 113th Congress over lunch, February 14th at the Washington Plaza Hotel. Congressman Jerry Connolly and Jim Moran of Virginia are advocates for the IT sector, and they'll talk about the fiscal cliff and debt limit, the continuing resolution, and sequestration. You'll also hear about the latest thinking on defense spending, insights on a new cyber bill, healthcare spending, government procurement reform, and other pressing issues. Register today for Affirm's monthly luncheon on the 113th Congress, February 14th at affirm.org.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Stan Sloan, and I want to, as I mentioned before, Stan, I want to get your thoughts about some of the things that we're seeing. Of course, I wish I had a quarter for every time I used the word sequestration. You and I would both be able to go play golf this afternoon instead of being here. But that is something that is on the minds of people. One of the threads that I'm starting to see, that I'm starting to hear from people on the industry side, is a realization that sequestration really is just the car that we're taking to get to a particular destination, which is smaller budgets, and not the end result of where it is we're going to wind up. Smaller budgets are coming, and companies are having to plan for that and figure out what that strategy looks like. Is it your sense that your colleagues in industry are seeing that too, or is there still maybe a little bit of denial on the parts of people that are trying to figure out how to make sense of all of what's going to be happening over the next several years?
I think my friends and colleagues, you know, in the conversations at Happy Hour are, you know, first of all, people have finally gotten around to the view that this could really happen, right? You know, a year ago or, you know, 18 months ago, everybody sitting there said, this will never happen. So I think everybody's past that. And obviously the prudent executives, you know, you can't take that attitude anyway. You have to have a plan for to deal with that. I think everybody's starting to view it as a real possibility, and you're starting to see people put actions into place to deal with it. I think your analogy of the car to the destination is a good one. I don't know where the destination is. I don't know how far the destination is down the road. That's one issue, and that gets into, you know, what are the right strategic choices for the country in terms of percent of GDP that goes into defense or other things, and what are we going to do with entitlements? So that's a bigger argument. But I think everybody's now sort of a mindset that, you know, we have to plan for this, and it in all likelihood, you know, there'll be some sequestration.
Yeah, the latest that I'm hearing from the Hill is everybody seems to agree they don't want it, and nobody seems to agree that they will go along with the other guys or the other side's plan to fix it. And so I'm optimistic and pessimistic at the same time, I guess, if that's possible, because at least everybody agrees on the fact that they don't like it. And that seems to be the first step. There are, for a long time, there seemed to be a lot of folks that were saying, it's fine with us if that happens. It doesn't matter.
Well, I've gone from being optimistic to being optimistic pessimistic to being just pessimistic, because it doesn't seem to me that we have, a political environment that enables us to come to a negotiated path. It seems we're very bipolar, and that's the part that I'm most pessimistic about, because you can't operate that way. It's
A friend of mine told me the other day, as somebody who's been covering the Hill for a long time, that the thing that he's noticed is that members no longer socialize with each other across the aisle. So maybe you mentioned happy hour, and so maybe there's a potential there to try to figure something out.
The freshman congressmen are going to go bowling.
Exactly. That's a great idea. Because bowling's very popular these days. The way to fix this is, as you said, is unclear, and we're not going to solve that today. Operating within the context, though, of all of this, you mentioned an executive, prudent executive, is formulating a plan for a number of different contingencies. What's that process look like when you don't know what the end result is going to be? You don't know, not even necessarily just in your sector, but what anything's going to look like.
The way I think about it is you do a worst case, best case scenario, and you set boundaries on either side of that. As you progress towards the actual implementation of it, you have to make a choice as to which, you know, how far in either direction you're going to go. That's a judgment about risk and is probably unique to each company. But that's sort of the way that I bound the problem, and I think most people probably think of it that way.
You and I have spoken about leadership in the past and the leadership principles that are appropriate in a situation, and in all kinds of situations. What does that look like in an environment like this, where you're trying to keep people engaged in an environment where they see the same uncertainty that you do, and everybody's paying attention to this in this space, and keeping people's eyes on the ball, I imagine, is pretty difficult, not just on your side, but in the people that you deal with inside the agencies.
It's all over the place. So, you know, for the company executive, you have the dynamics of, you know, what's the impact to your particular business. And then, you know, for the employees in that business, they're all nervous because they read the headlines too. And, you know, that trickles over to subcontractors, to, you know, consultants, to everybody. I mean, the whole system is affected when you have that sort of environment. So it's a very difficult environment for an executive, and it requires not only some prescient thinking about, you know, what the likely outcomes are. You have to be a good predictor. You have to make tough decisions, and you have to make them with a conviction, and you have to follow them through. And you know, you try and message that to people. People are very smart. I always believe that you're much better off being honest and upfront with people than trying to sell them, you know, nonsense. They're you know, they see through that. And you know, you have to, it's like being the captain of a ship. Being an old Navy guy, I like to use Navy analogies. It's like being the captain of a ship steering through a heavy storm. You know, you got to set the course, you got to batten down the hatches, and you got to drive the ship through it.
Courage of your convictions, I suppose.
Right, that helps.
Stan Sloan's my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM for Industry Chatter today, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform, because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete, they're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world, your cloud.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIO's top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword survey, to see the results.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. Federal CIO Stephen Van Rokel.
The mentality of let's cut the bottom of our list off, the things that are least effective, that are maybe duplicative, and let's take part of that and let's feed the top of the list so we can invest in innovation, we can invest in cost savings, efficiency, and effectiveness of our employees or services that touch citizens.
Former DOD Chief Information Assurance Officer Robert Lentz.
The CIO is really the focal point in an information age business. Unfortunately, they oftentimes get trivialized to just manage the IT budget. In fact, I think the CIO has actually lost influence and power.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device, Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
About two-thirds of my customer base actually exists out.
Staying fit together. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. When the weather outside is frightful, being active ain't so delightful. It just takes motivation. Stay active with a buddy during the winter months and early spring. A partner can keep you accountable and make activities more fun. And being active during winter doesn't mean you have to go outdoors or use equipment. Shelley Full is the executive director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Running up and down the stairs in your home, being able to lift bags full of soup cans and do some bicep curls or some basic weight training, strength training, you really can do a lot without any equipment whatsoever.
Yoga and biking are good group activities that can help you learn new techniques, and any exercise you do keeps your mind sharp. Learn more at fitness.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Stan Sloan, Decision Science, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. Now, you mentioned a little bit at the beginning of the program, Stan, about the technology that's involved with this that your company produces. Tell me what an isotropic high-energy proton is, because keep in mind that I'm just a talk show host. I'm not a science expert by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, let me ask Captain Kirk, who's sitting next to me here. Very simply, you know, the planet is hurtling through space, and space is filled with cosmic rays, all sorts of atomic particles. Those smash into the upper atmosphere, and they create a variety of particles, but one of the particles is a pion. Pions decay quickly into muons, and where we started with this technology was the muons. Muons are unique. They're high mass, and they travel at close to the velocity of light. And because of that, they go through everything. So they go through lead, steel, concrete. As we're sitting in this room here, muons are going through you at about 5,000 a minute.
That's fine. I don't feel a thing.
I know. And that's the beauty of it, right? So we're taking advantage of those. We don't add any radiation to the environment. And we measure those muons as they go through things. And the degree to which the muons change their direction can be measured. And that correlates to the density of the material. So that's how we find high-density materials.
So do we see a picture on a screen, or what's the product that somebody uses to determine the safety or lack thereof of the container that they're scanning?
Well, the system that Decision Sciences has developed is automated. So it will look for initially we're looking for nuclear radiological threats. If the system finds one, it alerts. So all the operator sees in this case is a red light or a green light. If you get an alert, then you can image, and mm-hmm. we use a similar technique to medical tomography. So we call it muon tomography, but it's very similar to that.
This process started, my notes here say, at Los Alamos National Laboratory.
right,
which is obviously a federal government facility. Tell me about how that evolved and how, and we're kind of in that case back to the public-private partnership from the very beginning part of this as well.
Right, right. And that's a good point. This was a public-private partnership. So Los Alamos was doing research, basic research into muons, and they developed or proved the ability to detect the muons. When H.R. 1 was passed, subsequent to 9/11, the investors saw that technology and said and thought that could be applied to this requirement to scan cargo containers. So they licensed the technology from Los Alamos. Actually, a couple of patents were licensed. And then there was a cooperative research and development agreement where the investors funded additional cooperative development with Los Alamos. And so the original patents were licensed from Los Alamos. Then there are patents which are jointly held, which are produced through this cooperative research and development. And then they went on to develop additional intellectual property. And so we have patents which are just our own patents. But it's a great example of taking American technology, and you mentioned innovation.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole lot of things I can think of that are more innovative than this, and getting private sector money to develop to the point where it can answer, it can address a national need.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great story.
The story I mentioned, we'll link to some resources about this at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tell me more, though, about – you mentioned H.R. 1. You've alluded to that a number of times. And it strikes me that there have to be other opportunities, not in the space in which you're operating, but there are – we have a million different challenges in this country right now when it comes to national security, homeland security, and so forth. Overall, would you say that the landscape is amenable to this kind of, and when I say public-private partnership, I'm going back to the beginning where this work started at Los Alamos. Is the government doing, in your mind, a good job of saying to the private sector, we're testing a million different things, here are the things that we're considering, here are the challenges that we have, and let's look together for ways to match those up?
I think they're doing a pretty good job. In our case, this we've had a very good, close relationship with Los Alamos. And the fellows out there that, particularly Chris Morris, who's one of the founders of this technology, they've been a pleasure to work with. And we're still discussing some additional potential CR&D with them. So they're good at getting the technology out into the private sector. I don't know what the overall track record of success is, but the labs do that. They you know, have a mission to commercialize things. And I think a lot of good things have come out of that. I would argue that this will end up being one of the more successful commercialization efforts. But I think there's a lot of motivated people, and they have a lot of really great ideas. I mean, if you ever had the chance to go out to Los Alamos, it would knock your socks off.
The bottom line, though, on that is that the government seems to find itself in a position, budget-wise, where failing, they don't seem to get a lot of latitude from Congress on failure. And we've seen that in the renewable energy space and a number of other spaces where at the very first sign of something not going exactly as planned, they're under a lot of pressure and have a lot of eyeballs on them.
Yeah, that's an artifact of, you know, when you have one bad experience, then nobody wants to stick their neck out politically. To be honest with you, I think that's a problem in the government right now. We have the aversion to risk is very obvious and it's pervasive. And, you know, I understand that, and I understand nobody wants to, you know, take a spear politically for having a failure. But you also have to foster innovation. I mean, if we impede that, it'll be to our detriment in the long run.
Stan Sloan's my guest of Decision Sciences. This is Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. And a reminder that we'll archive our conversation at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Back in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Ovechkin down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe! Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Ovechkin, he scores! There it is, number one of the season!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
Profile America, Thursday, February 7th. It's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Nearly 200 years ago, it was even better to light a gas lamp. On this date in 1817, America's first gas street lamp was lit in Baltimore, Maryland. The coal gas was supplied by the nation's first incorporated gas company. Just like today, startups have their troubles, but in 1850, about 50 urban areas had gas works for mostly municipal and business illumination, along with some private residences. While gas lamps today are mostly confined to elegant accent lighting, natural gas itself is a huge energy source in America. Revenues for natural gas distribution to consumers and other users total about $130 billion annually. Profile America is in its 16th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Executive Advisor, Government and Technology at Corporate Executive Board. Apply for this job and other leading positions in the influential industries that make up our region at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com, finally, a career site made for you.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Stan Sloan of Decision Sciences on Industry Chatter. And if you and I sit down, as I hope we do, a year or 2 years or 5 years from now and have this conversation again, where do you see this space? Where do you see the federal government? Where do you see your company fitting into all of the issues that we've talked about today, Stan?
Well, a year from now, I hope we have these systems deployed and hopefully protecting the country a little better. We have a lot of opportunities in related technologies. So the initial application of this was targeted for maritime ports, cargo container scanning. But I didn't talk about the other particles in the cosmic ray interaction. Muons are one, but electrons also come out of there. Electrons are a little different than muons. They don't have the mass and they don't go through things as readily. So they get stopped or absorbed, depending on the material. The electrons are very useful in determining the lower density materials. So we now have a contract with the government to demonstrate the ability of the technology to look for other contraband, not just nuclear and radiological stuff. Mm. We'll have that deployed within that year time frame. And that's a game changer, because then you're looking at a technology that can deal with multiple problems, and it is safe. It's completely passive. It doesn't have some of the other limitations of existing technology. So that, to me, is pretty exciting.
Where do you want to see it? Because when you frame it in that way, it sounds to me like there's potential for this not just in ports either. There's a million other places
right.
This will
airports,
go.
Rail. You know, right now, we have rail crossings on the borders that are very loose.
Mm-hmm.
So rail is another opportunity. You can imagine this at For infrastructure protection, you know, entrances to nuclear power plants where you want to make sure nobody's smuggling nuclear stuff out. I mentioned border crossings. You could scan airplanes with it. I mean, there's a lots of applications.
What are a couple of things that you think the government could do in the next year to 5 years to make acquisition of all kinds of technology, not just the technology that your company sells, easier for the agencies once they've made the decision, yep, we get this is something that's going to help us, we want to get it, and then what's the next step? Where are some places that that process can be streamlined, do you think?
Well, one is, and again, I'll give you experience from Decision Sciences' point of view, because we developed this on commercial money, it's been a little hard for the government to figure out where to plug it into their normal development paradigm. And so coming up with a way to streamline that and make it a little easier for people to do that and to embrace and encourage private investment to develop solutions for these sorts of problems, not just us, but, you know, that would be to the country's interest. So I think a change in the – not necessarily a change, but an additional perhaps pathway to get those things more quickly into government evaluation.
It seems like there would be room for a policy for this kind of development if this is something that we would expect to see more of in the foreseeable future, more public-private development of technology like this.
Yeah, and to be fair, they do have policies. I mean, if you look at the mission statement for certain agencies within the federal government, mm-hmm. there are people that, you know, their mission is to get things quickly into the acquisition space. But the reality is, you know, we're dealing with all these sorts of things we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for coming in today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Great to catch up with you, and I wish you a lot of success with this company.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Stan Sloan is the president and CEO of Decision Sciences, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can learn more about the company at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.